welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. As you know, Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. That basically means that we pretty much do everything within the industry realm. Buying, selling, brokering, meaning organizing substantial transactions. The only time we really broker is with really massive estate pieces. We've had some of the most famous coins in the world through our shop, miraculously, and you know, multi-million-dollar coins have been in here, and we've been able to be involved in some transactions there, and you know, for minuscule fees, technically, just for the honor of handling it, or you know, so basically, matching buyers and sellers on a level like that. You don't, as a shop owner, you don't want to buy a $2 million coin and sit around and try to find a buyer, unless someone out there is interested. Let me know. I'm kidding, but so anyway, we do that. We are a full service, meaning we know everything there is to know, or at least we strive to. That sounds a little bad, but we do everything we can to know our industry very well. I believe in it firmly. We deal in precious metals products, but also a lot of other things. There's a lot of cool stuff when you get into coins. Coins are very interesting. I mean, people kind of think of all these exotic rarities and stuff. There's so much cool stuff out there. And we had such an era in this country, people don't realize we absolutely established the world standard for fairness and value in our coinage and currency, essentially. Our coins, there was a time when we started to make the U.S. silver dollar in 1794 that we increased the net content of the coin to initially to 460 grains. The international standard at the time was 420 grains. So we had this great idea that we were going to make the U.S. dollar that much bigger and that much better. Great idea. Until literally at some point we were allowing both types of coinage to circulate. In other words, the majority of coinage in the United States before the Coinage Act of 1792 was essentially Spanish. You've heard of maybe 8 reales, pieces of 8. Old timers will say, you know, 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits a dollar. Well, an 8 reales, well, basically an 8 reales was a dollar, and it would break down into eighths. So by today's standards, you'd be dealing with 12 and a half cents per piece, per reale, or per bit. And so they made wonderful coins that were beautiful. 1 reales, 2 reales, you know, etc. And I've had some beautiful examples in my collection. But then you get to the large silver dollars, the old, we call them, well, pillar dollars or Carolius dollars. Those were circulating internationally everywhere, and the Spanish were minting them in all their colonies, as Obama would call them. And so Mexico had figured out we would exchange them dollar for dollar, more as an honorary thing. So Mexico figured out with the Spanish involved, which led eventually, is one of the it's one of the things that led to the Spanish War. But they would send, well, they, what happened is they sent shiploads, or they put on big ships huge quantities of the Mexican minted Spanish 8 reales, their trade dollar or unit of dollar, which is what we would call it now. The word dollar came from the word thaler, T-H-A-L-E-R, which was a word for trade unit. And so they'd bring up their 416 grain to 420 grain coins. And legally, they would go and trade them straight across for our 460 grain silver coins. and thereby be making a 10% profit. That may not seem like much, but if you realize at the time, a dollar had, gosh, at least $200 worth of buying power in it. So 10%, you know, and then they'd come in with how, you know, hundreds of thousands, I'd say at least. So if you're making today's equivalent of $20 a piece on 100,000 coins, guess what? That's $2 million. That's not a bad day for doing nothing but exchanging currency. So we ultimately stopped the production of our early silver dollars, and then we renewed it. That we ended it the last year of the silver dollar, that of the bust. We call it bust type because the side, if you look at the coin sideways, well, no. A bust is a side profile of a person. Back before, you know, photography, they would carve busts. If you go to like Mount Vernon and things like that where George Washington lived, his very famous friends would have busts made of him. And what's even worse a lot of times, but very common at the time, they would have busts of themselves made. So it would be like a statue from the armpits up of their head and their shoulders, and it'd be very accurate. Most of the time it was in a white kind of a marble like you see in Greek statues and stuff. But they would literally present busts of themselves to their good friends. So they were very expensive to make. And a lot of it, you know, we don't live in that era, which is, you know, very important to understand. There's so many things that we transpose the way things are now with the way things were then, and we make moral judgments, which is really becoming extreme, I guess. It's becoming really a problem where we've got these snowflakes, if you will, in our society, created by all the messed up norms of society right now. And then they look back and say, you know, all of our founders were bad guys. They were slave owners and bigots and white racists, and, you know, they were rich and they, you know, greedy capitalists. And but that's not, first of all, it's not true. Wealth does not a bad man make. And if one man owns wealth, it doesn't mean another doesn't. But at the same time, that was the culture. And the culture is different today. Judging a man from a grave, which is what we've done in the last couple of years, where we're removing all these statues of famous, you know, historical figures in our nation. And these are being driven by, you know, 21, 22, 23-year-olds primarily that are just radicalized by the universities. And they're being pushed by crazy professors. Maybe their brains have been fried on drugs or something. I don't know. But there sure seems to be a uniformity to it. But at the same time, I think if you're like, if you have Christian beliefs and Judeo-Christian ethics, you have a uniform belief with others who share your faith. If you don't have the faith, you don't understand. But it's the same with evil, sadly, or worldliness. Apparently, we all manifest the same. So we all end up in the same place if we go down the same road in most cases, some more extreme than the others. And so if you, getting back to the earliest of times, we have, well, there was the 1804 silver dollar, which was the last year they made. They made 12 of them. One of them was lost, believe it or not, with Lewis and Clark. They were given it as a parting gift for their expedition. And when they were going through what is now Great Falls, Montana, where I'm from, they got to the falls, which were substantial. And their journal said they could see mist from falls like 20 miles past. They were big falls, and they had to circumnavigate them. And they were also being followed by a grizzly bear for hundreds of miles. And so they had to take all their boats out of the water, and they had to circumnavigate on foot all the falls. So they took barrels, and they took all their valuables, all their expensive things, pocket watches, unnecessary rifles and weapons, money, family photos, whatever they would have had at the time. I don't know why I threw that in there, but I'm sure there was some. And, of course, the 1804 silver dollar and some peace medals, which were issued by Thomas Jefferson to give to the Indians, which, as you can imagine today, are worth a pretty significant amount of money. They buried them in barrels on, it's been a while, but I'm from there, and they buried them in barrels on the south side of the river, which they did it in the summer when the river was very low and it was below a set of falls, and they buried it in the dirt or whatever the ground, and above it was a huge cliff. And then when they came back to retrieve it later, a couple things had happened. For some reason, that cliff had broken away enormous boulders and fallen on top of it. Secondly, and so there was no way to access it from the other side of the river anyway. I know where it is. I've been out there. And in the winter, the water, or I don't know when, the spring, I guess, the water gets very, very high, which is when they were coming back through. There was no way to access it, so they left it. So it's covered in massive, 20-ton boulders, and also covered in water a good part of the year because of what happened when they were gone. Something divine there, who knows? Maybe someday they'll dig it out. They've had issues, and their journal's very specific where it's at. And I had a friend when I was back in banking there who managed that dam, and he was familiar with the story, but there's really no way to get at it. Even if you shut off the dam, you would have to, and that's a lot of water. There's a lot of water to hold the Missouri River back. That's a lot of water. And then they would have to get heavy equipment across that river in that spot, which is filled with these massive boulders. And it's below a cliff. It's just impossible. It'd be such a huge undertaking. Someday they may do it, but it would just be substantial beyond comprehension. So there lies a great deal of amazing American treasure there in my hometown where I came from. So those same silver dollars, 1804 was the last year. They did that because of the trade out with the Spanish, which they had to honor their word. Typical American Western culture, good thing, Judeo-Christian mindset, Psalms 15, who can dwell in the holy hill of the Lord? I think it's number 5, says, he who swears to his own hurt. You make a deal, you got to stand behind it. And so we established the firmest coinage. It's just beautiful. And we maintain absolute beauty in our coinage. And even in some of the more crude stuff in the 1830s, that was all, they were all the dies at the time were hand-carved. When you get into some of our currency in the late 1800s and late 1800s, it was hand-drawn, incredible vignettes. And then they would hand-carve the printing blocks by hand. I just can't even imagine it. And then they'd anneal the metal. It was phenomenal, the accuracy and perfection they had. I don't know if you've seen writing from that era, but it is absolutely gorgeous. And they were using fountain pens. But our founders were good men. I mean, you even think of like Penn family, Pennsylvania. There's so many. They were very wealthy people. I was listening to some liberal the other day on the news attacking our founders, saying, well, they were just here for the money, okay? Well, yes, that's probably correct, because man is motivated by gain. Without gain, there's nothing to drive us the way God made us. Not only that, we are designed to recognize and desire quality and value. God created a monetary system in the beginning of Genesis, and it goes all the way through history. It establishes everything about us and who we are. Money makes the world go round. Economically, it's a major thing. We're lied to with this socialist mindset that it's bad. And that socialist mindset got into the churches around the turn of the 20th century, from the 1920th, about 1900. Socialism was a real popular thing. That's what led ultimately to them being able to, you know, we had Theodore Roosevelt, which, by the way, if you read his speeches today, or even Thomas Jefferson, they thought he was the most radical left-winger imaginable. And if you read their stuff today, they would be so far on the fringe of conservatism, it wasn't even funny. The thing that made Thomas Jefferson liberal was his mindset of total and complete freedom. Freedom being the greatest of all things. That's where our Declaration of Independence said we had to have, you know, we have unalienable or inalienable, depending on how it's written and translated, rights given to us by God. We are each uniquely endowed by our Creator to accomplish a task or a goal. In a way, a destiny. The parable of talents. I was speaking with someone yesterday who said, well, I don't believe in destiny. Well, true, but you know, you do have a destiny when God gives you a set of talents. And he puts you in situations where you can exercise those talents and be prosperous and happy. But you cannot do that in a socialistic system that says everyone's got to be equal, everyone's the same. One person is given the gift of art. They can paint. Some can sing. Some have incredible, you know, analytical, logical, or mathematical minds. Some have the gift of speech. Some have the gift of looks and a variety of athletic talents, and on, you get it. It doesn't, all that stuff's given by God. We are responsible for what we do with it, and we will be held accountable for what we do with it. One of the toughest things in life is to try to put a square peg in a round hole with humanity. In other words, to try to make one man like another. And it's interesting, I've said in the past, the more miserable a person is, the more they tend to demand other people be like them or comply to their misery. Now, there are situations where we have people that we have to admire, coaches, bosses, maybe, if possible, hopefully. And, you know, and we also need to come under their authority and do what they say. But it doesn't always mean, or most of the time it doesn't mean we need to change who we are. We just need to exercise different talents. And then the parable of talents tells us that immediately they went out, the two winners, if you will, and multiplied or invested those talents and got more. So when you take the talents God gave you and you exercise them reality in you know, realistically fit what you're made to do, you multiply. You'll gain more talents. You look at guys like Elon Musk, who, you know, owns Tesla and SpaceX and had PayPal. The guy, he starts out in one area of life. And then he branches out because as he's exercising his talents, he becomes more talented and more capable to exercise those talents in other arenas. That is the sign of the exercise of the talents that God gave us. So, and when socialism says everyone's got to be equal, everyone's got to have the same, it's not fair that someone else has other. The real complainers in that system and the perpetrators of it, or propagators, are, the, I think in general, are those that don't want to exercise their talents, have either gone down a road that doesn't really manifest their talents, and or combined with jealousy, which the Bible always pairs with bitterness, hatred, envy. You know, in Galatians, I talk often about the fruits of the Spirit, but it also talks about the deeds of the flesh beforehand. And he basically says, if you sow to the spirit or sow to the flesh, you get corruption. That's what happens with socialism. It's folks, it's formalized, government endorsed, government authorized, and government executed theft. But the bottom line is, it's a lie. How many generations have listened to the same lie from politicians and continue to vote for the lie? It feeds our flesh. We want, and people will try to get all, intellectual about it and philosophical about, and then we have to go to the extremes. Well, there are people. There are people out on this end of the bell curve or spectrum. There's people on that end, and it always goes there, but that is a separate issue. We are called by Christ to care for and nurture the needy. So that's not, socialism doesn't provide that. We lost over 200 million lives in the 20th century. Mao Zedong, Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Lenin. These guys are nuts. They were crazy, crazy power-hungry men feeding the flesh. People don't realize the People's Republic of China, okay? It's a republic. They have a foundational set of rules, but it's the People's Republic. Wait a minute. You mean democracy? Yeah. They voted for Mao Zedong. They voted for Mussolini. They voted for Adolf Hitler. They voted for Stalin because of the promises of unreality or unrealistic items. They don't know. They're not taught. You know, Karl Marx said, give me the schools or and the children and the media, and I will change an entire generation in no time at all, basically what he said. They brainwash our children, and our children are very susceptible to this. When Christ says, if you do to the least of these, you'd be better off being thrown into the ocean with a millstone, 6 tons, around your neck than when you see me for judgment. Deceiving children on a national scale is deceiving a land. It's deceiving everything God is for. Now, the Bible says that he lifts up authority and brings it down, and nobody has authority without his authority, okay? And we say, oh, that means it's his will that Stalin or Hitler gets in power. Not true. It means he allowed it, but we have an option in this country, as an example, to choose between the leaders we need or the leaders we deserve. We deserved Obama. Obama was an anti-American, socialist, colonialist, anti-capitalist. Of course, now he's worth unbelievable amounts of money. After he got out of office, he flew to a private island in Tahiti, or an island string that's, top in the world. Came in on a Gulfstream 600 private jet, which is probably a $70 to $80 million jet. He had a full detail. He rented 11 very expensive villas. I'm talking expensive to the tune of between over $3,000 a day to $10,000 a day, depending on the villa. So you're talking $50,000 a day. And he stayed there for weeks. Where'd that money come from? People say, well, it was probably George Soros's. Okay, great. Even though Obama's net worth was $60 million when he left, that's still extraordinary compensation for a avowed Marxist and a black liberation theologist. We have seen, beginning with Obama, he stirred this country up so bad. He said, we're going to fundamentally transform America, and we have. We are so divided from within, folks. I mean, I couldn't even lay out every special interest group, but you may not recall, but Obama started this phraseology called tribalism, stating that everybody operates and relates from a tribal perspective. Now, he might have, because he knew his roots, there's his purported father, and then what's believed to be his real father. His mother was involved with this other man. I don't have his name. All the evidence points to that guy being his real father. But he had his pseudo-father was a radical socialist, and he was raised Muslim, and he was taught extreme anti-American rhetoric as a Muslim. Well, in Islam, they have what's called taqiyya, which we would call lying, but they're commanded to lie for the furtherance of Islam and Allah. They're commanded to lie to gain positions of power to exercise these things. That's why when he was in office, Obama shipped over $1 trillion a year overseas. We know there's so much. He spent so much. Well, a lot of that money, or some of that money, is coming back under the Repatriation Act under Trump. When you combine that with the hyperinflation that he's created, Trump, to make this country, you know, economically sound. Now, the Fed is a mess. So this isn't the hard money of old. This is fiat currency. There's no limit to it. So the concept of bringing it back in a normal economy makes complete and perfect total sense. But under a fiat currency standard, not so much, because we're pumping currency out so fast. When you combine the repatriated dollars, which prior to COVID was like $3.6 trillion in Trump's term, the fact that we'll be spending a minimum of $10 trillion on this you know, farce, this planned demic, it's hyperinflation is what's coming next. Okay? Now, back to the parable of talents. God gives, you know, the neat thing about the word talent is it applies to your physical abilities. It also applies to your financial stewardship responsibilities, to what God gave you. So it's a dual meaning scripture. Many of us have some money somewhere that we're saving. With everything going on, folks, we are being fed lies as never before. Jesus mentioned in Matthew 24 about the great deception. We all know about the mark of the beast, and we've had all these different theories. Okay? What is it? We've had Bill Gates proposing, if you will, or demanding, universal vaccinations. These special one-size-fits-all vaccines that are not tested, nor does he care. He was quoted clearly, and you can see it on a TED Talk. Trust me, the media has done everything they can to cover it up, as they do now. But he made the statement in one sentence. He said, essentially, we need to get the entire world vaccinated. And he said, so we can reduce world population. That's a Freudian slip. He never took that back. He never reneged on it. He never apologized for it or clarified it. Of course, the left-wing media did everything they could to try to do that for him, but he didn't do it himself. So that's his belief system. I know an individual who worked for him for 22 years. He was the head of a very important department, and he's worth an incredible amount of money. He knows Bill Gates personally. He said about as good as anybody could. And he's been the longest living decabillionaire. In other words, he's had over $10 billion longer than any other man on earth. He's also had the highest average net worth of any other man on earth post-Solomon. Well, that we know of. No one's exceeded Solomon because the scripture said they wouldn't. But at the same time, I'm sure there's other people that their relative wealth was pretty phenomenal. Technically the king of Saudi Arabia is worth more. But overall, he's had this money for so long, he's basically figured out how to use it, and he's really obsessed with world population. He's a brilliant man, but he's got that worldly perspective. When he created the Gates Foundation, it was under the pressure from Clinton. Clinton's administration, the FBI, NSA, whoever, wanted Microsoft to open a backdoor portal that the government could reach and access its citizens' computer activity anytime, anywhere. Because if it was opened up by, Gates at the time, apparently that would have made it okay. I don't know. Because now we've got FISA tracking. I mean, we're not supposed to spy on our own U.S. citizens. We've got FISA tracking, which is essentially a secret court that the FBI primarily or high-ranking government officials go to obtain warrants for wiretaps. And then from that point forward, they monitor them. And the problem is there's so much evidence coming out right now of FBI corruption and NSA corruption and misuse of the NSA system and the FISA courts. It's unbelievable. We assumed that the judges on the FISA courts were being duped or snowed. These guys they're bringing things like the Steele dossier to get warrants against Russian operatives, supposedly, during the campaign. Well, in that, they get calls with Flynn. Then we have more unmasking requests than ever before on one man. And what happens is they're listening to Russian operatives, hypothetically, and they hear another person on this end, American, and then they can request an unmasking because hypothetically, they're not supposed to know who it is until they're given permission. There was 19 unmasking requests against General Flynn, who, if you know, was convicted of lying to the FBI. They came in, they said they were just interviewing him in the early days of Trump's White House, told him they didn't read him his Miranda rights, told him he didn't need an attorney, and they just had a casual conversation. And then later on, they gave what's called a perjury trap. They asked him questions where they said, hey, what about this? What about that? And he'd get his time wrong. Well, I think that was Thursday at 7:30. No, later on, they said, no, it was Tuesday at 11:30. He'd say, I think that conversation was about an hour. They said, no, that conversation was only 9 minutes. This is literally how they put the man away. They bankrupted him. By the way, he's a general. Okay, general. He served our country well. Obama hated him. He served under Obama. They obviously clashed. Obama canned 9 generals. Rumor is from people I know in the military that he was literally asking them to agree to pull weapons, to point their guns at U.S. citizens who would not obey his authoritarian command. He wanted to take this country over to the next level. I believe that America, by its nature, was frustrated with the acceleration, the rate of change that Obama was bringing, which is why now he first says, hey, he's telling his people, he first sends out signals when all this stuff's going on with the impeachment hearings. He knows what's out there. All of this is designed as a diversion to hide all the truth. And he's saying, hey, we need to slow down. People don't want this radical change so fast. Well, he was right. He also knew that they were tapping on the door of his impropriety, scandalous behavior out of the office, terrible breaches of violations of the Constitution. He doesn't know who has what on him or whether they cleaned it or not. Why do you think Hillary bleach bitted all of her records and destroyed her phone and had it hammered and smashed and burned with acid? Because there was some seriously incriminating evidence on there. We're finding out more and more about this stuff with the FBI just conducting an absolutely unconstitutional, illegal monitoring of people and falsely accusing, falsely charging, deceiving the courts. The biggest question now is they come back and show that Flynn was absolutely set up, unquestionably, undoubtedly. The attorney general is like, okay, enough's enough. We're going to fix this. We're going to retract. We're going to pull his conviction. We're going to remove the whole thing. And then all of a sudden, one of these judges, federal judges, comes out and says, not so fast. I'm not sure there's enough evidence there. And he, quote, lied to the court, which he didn't. He lied to the FBI. So the problem with the perjury trap, you have a man testify. So supposedly he lies to the FBI and his information on the stand doesn't match. Well, the judge says you're lying to me. The FBI says you're lying to them, and they're both coming after you. So all of a sudden right now, this thing sits in limbo. This stuff is so politically driven. It is absolutely amazing. It's beyond comprehension where we've come in this nation and how far away we are from anything that's reasonable or rational whatsoever. So I think essentially where we're at with all this stuff is we're at a point of extreme culmination. I think that it gets to the point where we're so radicalized in our left-leaning thinking and we're being so radicalized by our media. Our media is dumping stuff on us that is just so far out there. And I was listening to an old gentleman on the news. I think he's in his 80s. And he worked for the USSR, believe it or not, in the propaganda department. And he said that what we're doing in America so far supersedes anything they ever would do there. Because he said propaganda there was 99% truth and 1% deception. He said what we're doing is 99% deception with 1% truth, if that. So where am I going with this? It's possible, among other things, that this whole COVID experience is part of a massive, it's a multifaceted coup attempt on our country. One, it's a massive deception from all of these things that the left has done to take over this country. They want complete and total control. They do not want the will of the people. The will of the people is who they elect and vote. So they want to skew all the information that people have to make a, quote, educated decision. They want to fake it all. They want to deceive. They don't even want to give the option. That's the problem with Google. Like I said, try to go find information on Google that's contrary to the overall narrative. It is so gone now, folks. I have people say, well, I use DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo goes through Google. Well, I use Yahoo. Well, they're pulling from the same database. There's nothing different. It's the same stuff. It's all pay to play. Most of it's about money, but they have countless people purging and scrubbing all this information so you cannot get good truth. So you have to go out and find the truth yourself. And that is the difficult part. You need to find sources of news and information you can trust, and you really got to search high and low. We've got so much evidence now with COVID that it's so phony, and I've gone over this, but we go all the way back from, you know, Bill Gates. We've got he gets the patent on the coronavirus, which, by the way, when I was reading some of the transcript of Judy Mikovits, who worked with Fauci in the 80s and watched them intentionally postpone medication for HIV/AIDS, leading to millions of deaths because they wanted to get patents on the virus. They wanted to get patents on the patent includes any what they call genomic sequencing, which they don't, you know, the left will argue, well, that's just different. It's like, no, you don't even know what you're talking about. It's doing anything with the virus at all. So from that point, it automatically gives them the patent rights to any testing, to any vaccination, etc. Fauci was on this on HIV in the early 80s, and huge corporations made huge money on this. Over the deaths of individuals, the fear. They have to push all this out there. So I mentioned earlier Gates's tendency towards, you know, this universal vaccine where he proposed a nano chip to be involved so that you can be tracked anywhere you go, whether or not you have this chip, you've had this vaccine. Well, we've got scripture that tells us that you can't buy or sell without the mark. Bill Gates says, well, we could make it so you can't buy or sell without this mark. But it's also interesting, the scripture tells us, you know, the right hand or forehead, we don't know, that may be where they put another something, we don't know. But then it also talks about that there's this, these boils on their skin. They end up with this terrible, some sort of a disease. And remember in the Bible when it says you can't buy or sell without the mark, it really means, and I looked that up on the show here recently for you, it means to participate in the marketplace. We wouldn't have known years ago reading this that we'd have an internet, that you'd be buying all your stuff on Amazon. So you end up getting potentially some kind of a microchip that you have to scan and prove. Or maybe it's a combination of a microchip and a retinal scan. Or maybe the right hand or forehead is your fingerprint and a retinal scan. You know, maybe John, when he was watching this, he just saw something scanning something. And he's like, well, that's your right hand, and that's his forehead. Well, maybe it wasn't his forehead. It's scanning his, doing a retinal scan. Well, Apple is now, everything is facial recognition. Google is doing it. IBM PCs are doing it. Everything is fingerprints and retinal scan. You use your Apple computer, the new one, when you set it up, or even your Apple iPhone, your iPad, whatever, you set it up for your fingerprint. And they also have the new retina scanning on Apple, which it scans your retina. You just don't know it's doing it. So wouldn't that be, you know, you've got the mark, you've taken their vaccine, you've got proof that, you know, whatever that is, maybe they registered under your retina and your finger. I don't know. I'm just being hypothetical. But I'm telling you, there's so many things we never would have thought. Health. You know, Cloward and Piven said that you can take over the entire country through the healthcare system, because arguably healthcare can be applied to anything and everything in your life. Everything. Where you go, the air you breathe, the clothes you wear, you know, of course, the food you eat, the kind of car you drive, how much carbon emissions do you create? You know, and what kind of exercise are you doing, and all kinds of stuff. I mean, folks, it gets crazy. A while ago, these things, and they still are, these things called Fitbits came out. People put them on. They'd monitor all of a person's vitals, keep track of how many steps you walked and all that stuff. And then the Apple Watch does it. And in the military, a friend of mine who's there has that. They all have it, and they're so extensive and in depth. They're learning, a side note, which I'm specialized for, they're finding out that these really experienced veteran warriors, when they're in the middle of warfare, taking fire and giving fire in the middle of combat, their blood pressure and their heart rate doesn't even increase. It's just business as usual. There's a talent. There's a skill. Those are the kind of people that make it. So they had these, you know, they've got these new monitoring systems. What happens if they get to the point where they're, you know, it becomes mandatory? Because we have, you know, what would be greatest for them? Nationalized health care. What are they pushing for? Nationalized health care. Obama fundamentally transformed America to create a level of chaos and anger and vitriol, entitlement, arrogance, rudeness. And he's the smoothest, classiest guy around. And then, you know, you get into all kinds of other stuff that could come out of that. We got Michelle Obama potentially being the vice presidential candidate, maybe, maybe not. It's, you know, her or Hillary. I mean, who knows? But it could be Michelle Obama, and all of a sudden we could be back where we began. So when you're watching all this stuff and they fight, the left just fights. I look up, you know, look up things like COVID lies and all that. Well, all the lies they claim are people that say it's not true, it's too excessive. We've had so much evidence. We know Bill Gates had the patent, got it under the Obama, and the National Institute of Health was doing genetic sequencing, genetic modification of these viruses at University of North Carolina. after Trump got in 2017, the NIH came in and shut it down, which is interesting because the NIH is the one that granted it. They shut it down and supposedly confiscated all the virus. Later that year, a professor from Harvard and UNC, University of North Carolina, where they were studying, were caught taking bribes to transfer this virus to China. They kept it on the QT because they didn't want to spook people. That's the virus that had been modified that Bill Gates owned, that supposedly the NIH had confiscated all. These two men are currently in prison. Well, eventually that virus got over to the Wuhan lab, or maybe they created a new one. They continued to mess with it. The odds of it coming out within feet, essentially, of the only lab in the world that works on it, that was modifying it, and supposedly in these wet markets, people don't even know what they're talking about. I've had people argue about the wet markets are so bad. What are the wet markets? I mean, they don't even know what they're talking about. They're big meat markets. Those things have been around forever. Even Fauci said initially it would take 800 years minimum for that virus to mutate from an animal to a human. Well, it didn't. It took however much time, we don't even know. It just wouldn't happen. We've never seen a genetic mutation of a virus live. We've never seen it occur, just like all evolution. We don't know what's what. Scary enough, though, we know how to modify that, which does make you wonder, prior to the flood, with all the stuff going on, men living 900 years, and you know, a completely different atmosphere where everything lived and things much more rarely died, what kind of modification were they doing? And where do viruses come from? And are they left over from that era? And did the animals carry them on the ark? Or did they, you know, float in the ocean? Or were they in fish? I mean, who knows? But there's something weird about this stuff. Why would God put a plague like that on Earth? It just doesn't, it's not sensible. I understand you've got meat-eating lions and venomous snakes. A lot of that stuff, I think, has micro-evolved over the years. For example, venomous snakes, when I was in Costa Rica, they have the most venomous snakes in the world, like 18 of them. But the thing is the venom, or those same species, same with frogs. They have all these bright-colored frogs that are poisonous. The frogs and snakes that dine, if you will, on mosquitoes lose all their color and lose all their venom because mosquitoes are a worthless nutritional source. But snakes and frogs that don't have that never get it. Okay, it doesn't evolve. So there's something weird about that, too. There could have been, hypothetically, genetic modification. There's other indications in different archaeological digs that during the different, you know, prior pre-flood atmosphere, they found actual centaurs, which are, it's an old species of horse fused with the upper torso of a man. They say it was done post-mortem. The archaeologists do, but actual neurologists and surgeons that have seen it said, no, that's pre-mortem. Prior to death, and so the atmosphere, you know, would have allowed for that at the time. The Bible does tell us not to mix species. We don't know how to this day. We're finally starting to learn how to do it through cloning, technically. So it's not really been possible to us till as of late. So anyway, so we've got Bill Gates, we've got the 2017 move to Wuhan. Late 19, we have what's called the Event 201. I know I've gone through this, but I think it's all relevant again. Event 201, where the Gates Foundation educated the educators. They brought in the WHO, CDC, NAIAI, all these NIH, everybody. They scared them. They taught them how to overreact and panic to this coming plandemic, which, by the way, Dr. Fauci predicted in 17, didn't predict, he stated that there would be a surprise pandemic in 2020 before the election. Big mouth. So we got that. Then after the Event 201, then we have the pandemic docuseries by Obama and Gates, which describes an outbreak of coronavirus that's deadly, and then how we need to overreact and panic and shut down all of society. And then from that point forward, we're going, you know, he gets into the need for all of this vaccination and all this stuff. He gets everybody really spooked. And then after that, here comes coronavirus. Well, there's tons of people that were really sick last November in America with the dry hacking cough and other things that are similar to corona. And now they're gone, but many of them are test, or now that disease is gone, but many of them test positive, and they don't know when they had it, how they had it, why they had it. This is when they started to discover 55 to 85 times the prevalence of the disease in three various studies, major statistically and scientifically sound clinical studies. University of Stanford, or Stanford U, University of Southern California, and then New York. 55 to 85 times the prevalence. Right before that, they were coming out with statistics that they're finding massive amounts of people that are asymptomatic who are testing positive as either having had it or having it currently. So right around that time, so then you get the 55 to 85 times the prevalence from three different studies. And then right around that time, it comes out that there's over 30 strains of coronavirus, and I'm like, of course there are. I studied them in college. So all of a sudden, you've got this one genetically modified strain, which happens to only be affecting countries that have an adverse relationship with China in one way or another. I don't think they counted on us figuring it out. I think the problem is, though, that Trump is playing the game, but he's put in a hard spot. The system's so big, and I've had people say, well, how could the whole world be in on it? Well, where do they get their direction and guidance? From us, you know, and they hate Trump, and, you know, they're going to fall right in line. It's humanity. It's fear, fear of death. Death is nothing. We cannot fear death. To live is Christ, to die is gain. But you can't believe how many Christians I've watched scrambling for the closet during this thing. There's no evidence. There's people like, I know people that have it, and they have this test, and this, or they were tested, which they're not, because the World Health Organization and CDC's guidelines for testing are four-tiered or fourfold, as I've mentioned. Number one is, of course, a solid positive corona test. That only comprises 2 to 4% of fatalities. The other fatality diagnoses are based on, one is symptomatic, two is presumptive, three is epidemiological, which means environmental probability. Symptomatic is probability that what they're manifesting is similar to corona, and of course, the other is, I keep doing this, presumptive, which means kind of it should be. There's people all over. I know people. I know one person in particular who had a situation where a judge, his mother died. Actually, there's a couple of these similar cases. In one case, a judge's mother died and they put it down as COVID. It's not true, and he went and fought it and got it changed on the death certificate. There's another situation in Montana from a relative I found about where the same thing happened. Someone died, they put it down on the death certificate. They've got situations where these morticians have come out and said, hey, this is crazy, because like in New York, the morticians, mortuaries do a lot of them are deputized coroners, and they're being forced to put corona down as the form of death because of the extreme quantity of money that gets fed into the system through all of this. Judy Mikovits is saying that they literally, it's orchestrated, it's a mess. So what's the moral of the story? Twofold here, folks. One, far less to worry about than you should, which you shouldn't anyway as a believer. We're being lied to. We're being quarantined. Our economy is being shut down and destroyed. This is only the beginning. Next fall, this gentleman that I know that worked for Gates for 22 years and says he's obsessed with it, says Gates is obsessed with this stuff. He said, I'm just afraid of what might get... He said, I didn't know Gates had like a dozen patents on these things. That's the new thing. These big corporations patent the virus and they make billions off of it. This guy's comment to me was that his concern was what comes next. He said, my fear is that what comes next will be actually be a pandemic, because he didn't say it, but I'm filling this in, because Bill Gates has all these patents. This gentleman talked or walked softly. Trust me, he was very cautious and careful, making sure I never quoted his name or told who he was. So we've all, if you've seen Bill Gates during all this, he's angry. This gentleman said he's angry because he wanted to be the expert. He thinks he's the world expert on this stuff because he's poured all of his own money into it. No one else has ever done that. I mean, you want to talk about Dr. Evil? Sure, he's intelligent and brilliant and incredible and richer than rich. But folks, this is what we're up against. How do you educate people? One at a time. But these conspiracies get so in-depth, it's just like 9/11. It's like the Fed. Try to go read how the Fed creates a dollar. It's the longest, most non-intuitive process. It's on purpose. All this stuff is so extensive, it's contrary to reason. You think, how smart can people be? Well, I'll tell you, folks, if you're not packing around a genius IQ, it might really blow your mind. And you don't understand the power of money. You can do so much with it. You can do whatever you want with it. So the second part of what I say, folks, I haven't pushed this lately, but I'm telling you, get your finances secured. Buy precious metals. Precious metals are money from the beginning of written human history till now. They've lasted forever. Their, performance as of late, even the last few years, has been tremendous. Get yourself in now. Protect and secure. Coins plus 444-0044. Lastly, please go online. Give us some good 5-star reviews. Google, Yelp, Facebook, whatever. Give us a call. We'll give you 2 nice Morgan Silver dollars. That's a great value, folks. That's a lot of money for a little bit of effort. So I appreciate you tuning in. Take care. God bless, and have a terrific evening. Bye-bye.